The Brad Sesnatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
And it's Monday, and it is the Monday of the first official week of football games that really matter in our little corner of the world, and that alone is reason to celebrate. The other reason to celebrate is because, friends, look what happens when you have knee replacement surgery. Not only do you walk better, but you get a different hair color, a different looking shirt. They're not buying it, are they? Good morning. I'm Jeff Munn, radio voice of Arizona State women's basketball, stadium announcer for the hottest team in professional soccer, Phoenix Rising FC, 14 in a row. What else do I do? Oh, I do a whole bunch of other things, including football, ASU pre and post. We start a week from Thursday, so that's great news. And today I'm here for Brad. If you follow Brad on social media, you know that his physical therapy and his recovery from knee replacements, surgery is going very well, and we're very happy about that. And I know that he appreciates all the well wishes he's gotten for a continued solid recovery. And we're here with lots of things to get to on a Monday. Among them, our NFL Network senior fantasy analyst, Michael Fabiano, will join Jordan Hamm a little bit later on in the program because, you know what, after 2 weeks of preseason, if your league hasn't drafted yet, it's going to be pretty soon. So I would think that this is a very crucial week for a lot of fantasy owners. So we will discuss fantasy football. Jordan and Michael, I'm moving my drink out of the way because we don't want to give any free advertising to coffee companies. He will be here coming up later on in the program. In the meantime, let me first point out to you that look who's up in the upper right-hand corner. Or they've been doing split screen lately. I'm looking up at the monitor. Ah, the eCam. Eric Sorensen, the spiritual guide of the Brad Sesmatt Show, joins us. How are you, sir? Good to see you.
Nice.
Literally
to see you.
And figuratively.
Yes, yes, yes.
You had a nice weekend, I trust?
Oh, yeah. I was on vacation last week.
So I saw a picture. Where
wonderful.
Did you? Where were you?
I was in San Diego, California.
Okay. You were on the beach. You took a picture standing on the beach.
Yep. Heaven and with homeless people. San Diego, California.
What's that?
Heaven with homeless people. San Diego, California.
Were you on Pacific Beach?
That was Solano Beach, my favorite.
I don't keep up. I used to, when I was married, my in-laws had a condo on Pacific Beach.
Nice.
Oh, you're not kidding. And it was just incredible. We have a lot to get to. We're going to get Eric involved in this because I always like to chat with him about things. His perspective on things going on in the world are great. Let me start, first of all, before we dive into what is going on in the world of sports, tell you that we're brought to you by Sagicor Now. And Brad is not here, obviously, but so I will say this in his behalf. If you're in a position in life where you don't think on a daily basis about what would happen to my family if something happened to me, now's a good time to think about it. And not just think about it, but contact Sagicor Now, and they can help you figure out and do it in plain English, which I think is really important. A lot of people get scared off about planning for the future because it can tend to sound like a bunch of gobbledygook. Is that a word? But Sagicor makes it very easy to understand. Very affordable, and as we say so often when we fill in here, what you're really buying is peace of mind. You can't put a price tag on it. Sagicor Now, and log on to Sagicor Now, and they'll be happy to tell you all about all the good things that come with being involved with Sagicor Life Insurance. We have not visited with you on the Brad Sesmatt Show since Thursday. The Cards with a loss last Thursday night, a preseason game to the Raiders. I am one of these people, and I know Brad feels this way, and I think a lot of people feel this way, that preseason football is just, there's nothing to it. I mean, preseason anything. Spring training baseball, preseason NBA, preseason NHL, you can really read, there's a great danger with reading too much into a preseason game in any sport, and especially true in the NFL. The Cardinals got buried early in this game against the Raiders, did not look good, did not defend the run well. If there was anything in reality that I would look at and say, okay, this is a point of concern for me, it would be the run defense. But again, it's preseason. I don't want to come to any hard and fast conclusions. The thing that came out of Thursday night that I thought was the most noteworthy was the media, the national television reaction. The game was on ESPN, and a couple of, one in particular, an ESPN commentator, Rex Ryan, basically trashed Cliff Kingsbury. Oh, I should put my phone on vibrate. Wouldn't that help? It's live television, or live whatever it is we're doing. where was I? Rex Ryan. He had some comments that were just not very pleasant about Cliff Kingsbury's attempt to install the air raid offense, basically, into the National Football League. And what really got me about was how sharp his comments were. He almost came out and said, well, he said he's rooting for it to fail. He's rooting for it to fail. First of all, and we can talk about Rex Ryan in general. I don't think it's ever a good thing for any commentator to come out and be anti something and openly say, I'm rooting for it to fail. I just don't understand that. Now, Eric, you can get in on this because I was reading a whole bunch of stuff about baseball over the weekend. There was also a player who used the phrase pretty boy football. Do we know? Was it a player? It wasn't a common.
You're putting me on the spot.
Yeah, and I admit,
again, I was away, so I watched. The
there
game,
was
but
somebody,
I like,
and I think it was
going
not
on back here. But I'll look it up. I'll look it up.
It's not Rex Ryan. Rex Ryan just basically was saying the NFL doesn't have any room for this. It's not going to work, and I hope it fails because it's bad for the NFL. Somebody else called it pretty boy football. Maybe it was Rex Ryan. And I read a lot of his comments, and
I have it right here, Mon.
Yes, sir.
It was actually safety LaMarcus Joyner from the Raiders.
Okay.
Who went on the ESPN telecast afterward and called Kingsbury's spread-oriented offense pretty boy football. So a player called out the Cardinals rookie coach in the air raid scheme.
Yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit further, a little bit later on in our next segment about the whole situation involving the rush to judgment on Cliff Kingsbury. But that bothered me a great deal to hear those kind of comments. The Cardinals play preseason game number 3, which is essentially generally considered to be the dress rehearsal for the regular season, Saturday morning Arizona time at Minnesota. The D-backs lose 3 out of 4 to the Giants, and it just doesn't appear to me that the Diamondbacks, they just don't look like a playoff team to me. I know that they're only still, 4.5 out of the second wild card. But to me, they just don't have that look of a team that can hang in there. Obviously there's time. Things could change. They start a series with Colorado tonight at home. But they just don't look to me like a team that is going to be able to make a charge and pass 3 or 4 other teams to get to that second wild card spot. And another thing that I want to talk about a little bit later on, even if they get there, is it really worth making a push like that? And I know that sounds a little confusing, but I'll explain a little bit later on. We do have meaningful football this week. The U of A will go down to Honolulu and take on Hawaii in the college football opener. There's 2 big games the first weekend, Miami against Florida in Orlando, and Arizona against Hawaii at Aloha Stadium in Honolulu. Couple other little notes pass along. I did mention Rising. If you're into soccer, Saturday or Friday night out at Casino Arizona Field, a really interesting game. They defeated Reno 1868 FC. See, he's talking like he knows soccer, but I'm the stadium announcer out there, so I know a lot more about the sport than I used to. And I think their 4-2 victory over Reno, to me, is a real sign that this could be really something special with Rising this year, because Reno, you could tell 5 minutes into the match, they were much more talented, much better than any of the other teams that Rising had played at home this year. And yet there was never a point where Rising was in any danger of losing that match. It's really, they have a home match Friday night with Sacramento, but boy, I'll tell you what, barring injuries, that looks like a team that could turn out to see something even more special than last year's was. What else? Very quickly, The Mercury won yesterday. The Griner suspension's over, so that moves on. ASU really gets into game planning mode kind of about the middle of this week for the opener with Kent State a week from Thursday, and we'll get into what I think we'll talk about what the prognosticators are talking about in relation to ASU. The AP preseason top 25 came out this morning. ASU's not in it, neither the U of A. Five Pac-12 teams are in the preseason top 25. And I think the Pac-12, a lot of people are still kind of downplaying the Pac-12 this year. I think it's going to be a stronger conference than a lot of the so-called experts nationally realize. And so we've kind of set ourselves up here for a lot of things to chew on over the next couple of minutes. So we'll take a break and we'll come back. And I want to focus in on this whole thing about pretty boy football and the rush to judgment on Cliff Kingsbury and the Cardinals and the comparison with a program that was in kind of in the same position a year ago. We'll talk about all that coming up next on the Brad Sesmatch Show, sports360az.com. Back on a Monday on the Brad Sesmatch Show, Jeff Munn for Brad. Before we get into talking about the Cardinals, I just got to get this in too because it's important to me personally. Over the weekend, the sportscasting community lost a giant in Jack Whitaker. I'm not going to go real deep into it because I know that most of you probably have never heard of Jack Whitaker. But in the 60s and 70s, he was one of the great essayists on television, did play-by-play NFL football and other things for CBS, moved to ABC toward the end of his career. He was on the broadcast crew of the very first Super Bowl for CBS, and he passed away yesterday at the age of 95, and I did want to acknowledge that. Tremendous essay. You can see some of his commentaries on the NFL Today on YouTube. So about the NFL and about the Cardinals in particular, Rex Ryan and others have been very critical of what they've seen so far from or haven't seen from Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray with the Cardinal offense. And I find it to be another case of the media. And I understand why they do this, because we're in a business where, and I'm talking about sports talk, talk shows, TV shows, where people want instantaneous reactions to things that occur. And I think back to a year ago with Herm Edwards at Arizona State when he was hired, he was hired almost 2 years ago. But going into his first season in 2018, there were tons of people who were rushing to judgment even before they played a game. It's not going to work. He hasn't coached in 30 years. This is going to be a disaster. And then it wasn't a disaster. He won seven games, went to a bowl, and everything is trending up for Arizona State football. With Cliff Kingsbury, I get the visual. He had a losing record as the head coach at Texas Tech. Didn't play a lot of big games while the head coach at Texas Tech. And he had been let go, got hired as an OC at offensive coordinator at USC, and then all of a sudden becomes an NFL head coach. But in the NFL, and I think this is true in a lot of sports, but the NFL in particular, they're very resistant to outside influences. The game does evolve and it changes. But it is the last major revolution to me in the NFL. You're going back up almost 40 years when Bill Walsh brought in the West Coast offense. And it was so successful with the 49ers that every team in the league ran some form of the West Coast offense. Dick LeBeau's Tampa 2 defense became the norm. But when it comes from the outside, the NFL really rebels. I'm talking about the NFL community rebels against it. And they're really rebelling against Cliff Kingsbury right now. Look, I'm not a football savant, so I can't tell, and nobody can tell at this point, because it's so obvious they're running a very vanilla offense in the preseason. Partly because they don't want to show teams what they can do, and partly because they're trying to ease Kyler Murray into this. He's the number one overall draft pick, and he's going to be the starting quarterback. That's an awful lot to put on Kyler Murray's shoulders. So they're trying to keep it as simple as possible. But I cannot understand how really smart football people can immediately jump out and say, this will not work.
And one of the things, Mon, if you don't mind me jumping
no,
in.
No, please do.
I do like to jump in from
absolutely.
Time to time.
Absolutely.
One of the many things that suck about preseason football is what we are talking about right now. because it's the preseason, because everything is so dumbed down, but that's the only thing that these so-called experts have to go on is, okay, well, how did the ones play against the ones? Well, we saw in week one, the Chargers played a very basic defense against Kyler Murray. The next week, the Raiders blitzed them and gave them different looks, and things got a little confusing. The game probably was a little fast to Kyler. But it's just until we get to week four of the regular season or week three of the regular season, we're just left to talk about, you know, these fake football practice exhibition games that really, you know, the Cardinals have gone 4-0 in preseason before and then went 3-13. So what can we really tell?
Last year they went 3-1 in preseason, did they not?
Oh yeah.
And how did that turn out?
Well, look at week one against the Redskins. They got destroyed.
Right.
Pretty much just set the tempo, the precipice for the rest of the season.
Look, this is going. What I said to people who were being critical of the Herm Edwards hire and the pro model that Ray Anderson was putting in place with ASU football, and I said it on this show. You can't judge it in a year. You can't judge it in a half a season. You can't judge it in 2 years.
Agree.
3 years is about the time that you start to say to yourself, okay, is this working? Is it not working? What I find interesting about the Cardinals is this. A lot of the reaction, and admittedly, it was fans on talk shows, but a lot of the reaction out of Thursday night was directed at Steve Keim. People were angry and want him out as the general manager. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I get it. You know, he's on kind of a short leash. I hate that term. But he's on his seat's warm.
Of course.
But think
he
about
knows that.
But think about this. It's going to take Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray 2 to 3 seasons to really get this fully implemented. And then and only then can we determine whether or not it works.
See, that I don't agree with.
Okay, you said week four of the regular season.
Right.
Can we come to hard and fast conclusions at that point?
No, but Kyler Murray has been running this offense since high school. So it shouldn't be that steep of a learning curve, I wouldn't think. I would think by the, you know, week 3 to 4 of the regular season, as he's seen different defenses, as you know, he's going against ones for an entire game, not for a half or a half of a half or two series. That's when we're really going to know. And he's going to make some really, really good plays this year, and he's going to make some really, really bad decisions.
He's
just
a rookie.
Of course. That's just part of the whole growing process.
Right. But here's my point. A lot of people in media, and we all talk about it, Steve Keim is under a little bit of pressure to make this work. Is it really fair to Steve Keim to judge him on one season? And if you're Cliff Kingsbury and you wake up after your first year and find out you've got a new boss, how secure do you feel that you're going to get a full opportunity to make this work? Do you see where I'm going with this? I think the fact that they have taken such a unique step with bringing in Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray, they have no choice but to ride it out, not just in terms of the coach and the quarterback, but the general manager for 3 years. I don't go with this theory that Steve Keim is fighting for his job this year. I think he's got 3 years to make this work. Okay, year two, if they're 0-8, then maybe you go ahead and say, okay, you know, but you can't judge this off 1 year. I just don't think you can sit here after the 16th game of the regular season this year and say, this works, this doesn't work. I've also said, I also said last year, if Herm Edwards goes 12-0 and plays in a college football playoff, I'm not ready to say, oh, this is knock it out of the park. Everybody's, you know, Ray's a genius, and this is going to work long term. No, you can't judge it either way off 1 year. If the Cardinals go 12-4, hypothetically, and win the NFC West and go to the playoffs, and you know, let's just play it out, go to the NFC Championship game, am I going to sit there and say, wow, this is the greatest thing they could have done, it really works? No, it's been 1 year. You got to give it more time than that. And I don't mean to be overly critical of people in the media, but I don't know why people, you know, I don't know why people in Rex Ryan's position can't just say, let's give this some time. Why can't they say that? On the one hand, I give Rex Ryan high marks for being outspoken and just speaking his mind and saying, I don't want this to work. And you got to remember his dad called the run and shoot the chuck and duck. There are things that go on in the NFL, and that's a great example. When Mouse Davis brought the run and shoot to the NFL, people hated it. People in the NFL hated it, but he won with it. Houston won games with it. And, you know, they hate when people come in from the outside. They hate when somebody comes from college with a new way of doing things and it works. I don't blame Mike Leach for not wanting to coach in the NFL. I mean, imagine the abuse that Mike Leach would take from the NFL establishment if he tried to come in and run the air raid in the NFL. And you can't tell me that some pro teams haven't approached him. The Cardinals might have last winter. They might have talked to Mike Leach. But there's no question that he knows, I don't want to go near the NFL. People aren't going to give me a fair opportunity to see if this would work. And you're not going to learn much off of next week either, because even though it is kind of a dress rehearsal for the regular season, they're still not going to roll out everything in the playbook against the Minnesota Vikings in a game that doesn't count. And look, I agree with Brad and everybody else that doesn't like preseason football. The Bears went to New York last week and didn't even take their regulars. They scrimmaged the regulars, then put everybody else on a plane to New York. Well, that's fine. That's well within Matt Nagy's right as a head coach to do it that way. But it just points out the absurdity of preseason football. And when people start talking about we should cut down the number of preseason games and increase the number of regular season games, I don't know if I'm crazy about an 18-game regular season, but I am okay with getting it down to two preseason games to see, you know, who can make this roster and who can't, and just leave it at that. And because this 4 weeks, this is torturous. This is just, ugh. I mean, and then at fourth game, The Bronco game, the regulars don't play. It's nothing above a glorified scrimmage. And I'm not ripping the Cardinals or anybody. I'm just saying, look, you know, let's just call it for what it is. And it's just, I'm not going to get that excited about it. I watched a little bit of Seattle and Minnesota last night on Fox. And it's like, okay, I mean, they're going to make it a Fox presentation. But come on, it's a preseason game. It's a preseason game. Not going to worry about it. I have a few thoughts, speaking of Fox, about 9 a.m. kickoffs in the Pac-12. And it's an interesting subject, to say the least. And we'll discuss it with you next on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Monday on the Brad Sesmatch Show, Jeff Munn for Brad. Coming up a little bit later on, Jordan Hamm will visit with NFL Network senior fantasy analyst Michael Fabiano. I've done fantasy football in the past. When I worked at the D-backs, the broadcasters had their own fantasy football league, and I signed up for it 1 year. And, of course, I do ASU women's basketball in the winter. And starting in November, I couldn't keep up with what was going on in the NFL. And ASU, the women's team plays a lot of their games on Sundays during pro football. And I would – this is no joke. I don't want to mention names. I would get text messages from people in my league proposing trades while I was on the air doing a game. And it's like, at that point, I thought, okay, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. And I admit, I'm sitting at home over the weekend, I'm thinking, gosh, I'm thinking about doing fantasy football again. And I just thought, what are you thinking? Because I'm not good at fantasy sports, but a lot of people are. So Michael Fabiano will be on to talk fantasy football because a lot of leagues are cranking up. They're getting started. So hopefully you'll stick around to hear Jordan's visit with Michael Fabiano. Okay, a few thoughts on a subject I know Brad has talked about, and I know, Eric, you've discussed it with him, and that is this proposal by the Pac-12 to consider playing some football games at 9 a.m. Pacific time. And Brad and I have had some great discussions about this off the air, and he's brought up some things that I hadn't considered. For one thing, his contention is that 9 a.m. game will get more run on the highlight shows during the day into Saturday night. And that's true. That's one I hadn't thought of. But I am decidedly against the 9 a.m. kickoffs. And let me just kind of go as quickly as I can. And Eric, if you hear something you want to jump in, feel free. I'm against it because I don't think it will do what the Pac-12 wants it to do. The intent of the conference is to get more people on the East Coast to watch Pac-12 football. My argument is I think more people on the East Coast watch the late night game, what I have lovingly called the late night snack from the Pac, at 10:30 Eastern on Saturday night than they would watching a game at noon Eastern. Here are a couple of reasons why. Number one, the Pac-12 is not going to put their best product on at 9 a.m. If you look at the Pac-12 schedule, there's a huge game late October. Utah plays at Washington. Both teams, they played for the Pac-12 title a year ago. It would not be out of the realm of possibility that they'll win their respective divisions again. So you're looking at a game that could have huge implications on the college football playoff seeding, not to mention the Rose Bowl. There is no way, no way the Pac-12 is going to kick that game off at 9 a.m. No way. Why? Because both teams would, if let's just say Utah goes into that game undefeated, they're on a course to get to the playoff. If they lose that game in Seattle, the first thing people would say is, you shouldn't have played it at 9 o'clock. And they would be right. The other reason that I'm dead set against the 9 a.m. game is because, as I said, I don't think it's going to do very well in the ratings. The only TV partner that has stepped forward to say we would take the 9 a.m. game is Fox. Okay, with all due respect to the people that work at Fox, let's just get right down to brass tacks. Fox is trying for about the 400th time to do a college football pregame show that looks like ESPN College Game Day. A, it's not going to work right away. And most people around the country, me included, our viewing habits are 7 a.m., 6 a.m., daylight savings time. We're turning on ESPN on Saturday mornings to watch College Game Day. It is perhaps, right with Inside the NBA on TNT, the best pregame show in sports television. You know, the going on remote, Lee Corso in the headgear, celebrity picks, you know, Tom Rinaldi with a feature that makes you cry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It is the gold standard. Fox is going to do a one-hour show on Big Fox, the Channel 10 Fox, with Rob Stone, professional, good, solid broadcaster, Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, and Urban Meyer. Now, friends, Bush and Leinart have already been quoted as saying they're going to use the time they have on that set to convince Urban Meyer to go to USC to take over for Clay Helton. One way or the other, Meyer's not staying on that show for very long. And if he's not going to put headgear on at the end of the show, I don't want to watch him if he's on anyway. Fox, for all the things that they've done in terms of innovation, the Fox box, referees in the booth, they don't know how to do college football. They just don't. It is tough to watch Fox do a college football game. They don't understand it. They don't understand the traditions. They can't explain what's going on very well. They put an NFL guy, Gus Johnson, as a lead play-by-play guy. Gus is a terrific talent, but he's out of his element in college football. And nobody, you could walk Joel Klatt into a police room with 10 people, none of them would be able to identify who he is. That's Fox's lead broadcast team, a guy who's better off in the NFL and an analyst nobody's ever heard of. So it's like, seriously, if that's what you're going to go with, it's going to go zero in the ratings. And at that point, I'm out. If ESPN was the one to say, we'll do the 9 o'clock game, we'll do a 9 a.m. game, I'm in because my lead-in is College Game Day. And I'm no fan of Reese Davis, believe me. The way he ripped at the Pac-12 a couple of years ago and still hasn't apologized for it was, I'm sorry, Reese Davis is classless. But beyond that, I love the show. Desmond Howard, Kirk Herbstreit, Lee Corso. I'm not changing. I don't care what Fox does. I don't care what they put on. I'm not watching that show. I'm an ESPN College Game Day guy. And most everybody on the East Coast is. The other thing is, if you put a Pac-12 game on at noon Eastern, what are you up against? The ACC, the SEC, the Big Ten, the other four Power Five conferences all have games on ESPN Family and Networks. Don't do it. stay with the late night game where you have the stage virtually all to yourself. The only other conference of note that plays at 10:30 p.m. on the East Coast is the Mountain West. And somebody will say, well, people on the East Coast don't stay up that late. Are you kidding me? It's Saturday night. Have you been in New York City on a Saturday night at 10:30? People are awake. They're in sports bars. They're watching things on television. Yes, they'll be watching. I would venture to guess that more eyeballs will watch the 10:30 p.m. late night snack from the Pac than they would a noon game in the Pac-12. I just don't want to do it. I don't think, and it hurts attendance, and Brad has always said it's always about television. Okay, fine. It's not going to do well on television. Not if it's on Fox. It'll get buried on Fox. I'm sorry, and I have a lot of respect for Fox Television. The things they did with the NFL were groundbreaking, and they will always be held in high esteem for that. But they, for whatever reason, don't know how to do college football. That studio show they're going to do, and it's in a studio. That's the other reason I'm not going to watch it. They're not going out on remote. They're going to sit in a room in Hollywood. What? You know, there's no way they can compete with College Game Day. I'm sorry. And with all those people watching College Game Day, they're going to stay on ESPN for the ACC, the Big Ten, or the SEC. I don't think it'll do a thing for the Pac-12. Might hurt the Pac-12. All right, I'm through venting. Eric didn't jump in at all because he knew I was just rolling. And
yeah, and I pretty much agree with everything you said. So,
oh, thank you very much.
Which is a rarity. Like people,
that is a rarity.
People that have not seen. So I went to TCU, okay, and
yes.
TCU plays in the
Big 12.
In the Big 12. So the early games in the Big 12 start at 11 a.m. And
that's not that bad.
But even the teams in the mid South don't like the early start time. And that's,
LSU hates it.
And that's 2 hours later than these proposed 9 a.m. Pac-12 kickoffs.
LSU hates it. Most of the – and they don't have to do it. I mean
– players want to play at 2:30 in the afternoon or 7 at night. That's pretty much like the best – those are the two windows.
And if you could prove to me that it would be a hit, that people would gravitate to a Pac-12 game at noon Eastern, I'd say, okay, give it a shot. But I'm just smart enough about television to know that if the – like I said, if ESPN wanted to do it, I'd say, okay, I'll give it a shot. But I'm sorry, Fox – does not know how to do college football. They try, God bless them, E for effort. They don't know what they're doing. Look at that. Look at what they're going to roll out. I know we got to get to a break. Look at what they're rolling out on that studio show they're going to debut in a couple of weeks on Big Fox. Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, Urban Meyer. Meyer will be gone by midseason. He'll take a coaching job. He's gone. Then what do you do? I don't want to sit there and watch Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart go on for an hour about how great USC is.
Maybe Clay Helton could replace Urban Meyer, since Urban Meyer is likely to replace Clay Helton, or so the whispers.
But I don't want three USC guys on that show. I don't want three USC guys. I get it. USC is USC.
I actually think Matt Leinart's pretty decent.
Leinart does a good job. I don't know about Reggie Bush. I haven't seen him. And Rob Stone is a host. He's a solid professional. He'll do a good job. But I'm so sick of Fox trying to imitate ESPN. Name one thing that Fox has tried to take from ESPN that they've been successful at. Undisputed with Skip and Shannon?
Yeah. I guess one other thing, mine, is you get so animated that you popped out your earbud there.
Thank you.
I would assume if these coaches in the Pac-12 have to play in this 9 a.m. proposed window, if that happens, is they'd have to adjust their practice schedule.
They would.
Week leading up to it.
You bet they would.
To get the players at least somewhat accustomed. I mean, 9 a.m. kickoff, not 10 a.m. or 10:30, be out on the field at 9. Like they're going to kick that ball off at like 9:02.
Right. And the other thing, and I'll duck this in very quickly. 50 years ago, almost, when the NFL went to Monday night games, everybody in the league said, I don't want it. I don't want to play a game on a Monday night. But it was an immediate hit on television.
Right.
This is not going to be an immediate hit. It's not going to be a hit at all. It won't do well in the ratings. It's going to be on a network. Nobody's going to watch. Don't do it. Don't do it. It will embarrass the conference. It'll set the conference back. Listen, let's talk fantasy football because it is getting to be draft time and a very crucial week for fantasy football players. Jordan had a chance to visit this morning, and he will with NFL Network senior fantasy analyst Michael Fabiano. So if you're a fantasy football fan, and there are a lot of you out there, get your notepad and get ready to take some notes, because you're going to get some good information from Jordan and Michael coming up next on the Brad Sesmatch Show.
We are in the thick of fantasy football draft season. Some of you may have already done your draft, some waiting until the very end of the preseason to make sure get that draft and make sure that you know where everybody stands in the fantasy football landscape. And to help us break everything going down in fantasy football right now, we have NFL Network senior fantasy analyst Michael Fabiano joining us. Michael, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
So before we get into the nuts and bolts of what's been going on with multiple holdouts and everything going on within the NFL, it sounds like you're coming to the desert here soon.
Yeah. So I've got a really cool experience for myself personally. My pals, Jerry Cantrell and Mike Inez, in the Ben Allison Chains. Everyone knows about AIC next week. On the 29th, we do the Allison Chains celebrity draft, and it's got The Miz, Rich Eisen, Jeff Garland, Scott Ian from Anthrax, Michael Bublé, a whole bunch of cool people, and including me. I'm not one of the cool ones. I just talk about fantasy football for a living. And after that draft on the 30th, I'm going to get all access to Allison Chains backstage at Irvine in California, taking the tour bus with them to Phoenix, and then going to the show there, and then taking the tour bus back to San Diego. I'm going to be documenting a lot of this on my social media platforms. So on Twitter, @Michael_Fabiano, on Instagram, @Michael_Fabiano Instagram. Going to be giving people a lot of behind-the-scenes look, talking about not only rock and the tour, but also fantasy football, probably going through how each of us did in the Allison Chains draft, because Jerry, Mike, and myself will all have our teams drafted on the 29th. So it is going to be a lot of fun. Also going to be meeting up with Bree from the Bella Twins, JJ, and some of my friends out there as well. So going to be a very cool time, and I'm excited to be able to share it with people on social media.
Yeah, sounds like a cool experience. So with what's going on with fantasy football, I think everybody is on kind of pins and needles looking at what's going on with the Raiders. You saw Mike Mayock yesterday, all in or all out for Antonio Brown and his feet issues, his helmet issue. Just where is this affecting his fantasy value, and where would you feel comfortable drafting him right now?
Yeah, it's amazing, right? I mean, this is a guy who was like a top five pick in every draft last season and came out and had 15 touchdowns and was Antonio Brown, production-wise. Mm-hmm. Now you go to a team in the Raiders where you don't have Ben Roethlisberger, where you go from a team that went from first in pass attempts to a team that was 16th, a team that was 5th in offensive plays to a team that was 24th. The rapport is not going to be there with Derek Carr as it was with Ben Roethlisberger, especially with him missing time. Now, as you mentioned, he's back in practice, but he's never going to be statistically the same wide receiver in Oakland that he was in Pittsburgh. It's not going to happen. Touchdown regression is guaranteed. I have him ranked right at the bottom of my top 10 wide receivers. At this point, he's a third-round pick. But to be quite honest, considering all of the drama, I wouldn't be surprised at all if people decided I'm going to pass on him and let someone else deal with the headache. But at this point, sort of the drop-dead round where I would see him available and think, ugh, I got to take him. I don't want to, but I'm going to, is round 3.
Okay. All right. With other drama within the league, Ezekiel Elliott still holding out and everything like that, and it doesn't help his cause. I don't think that Tony Pollard had a very good game, and it spurred Jerry Jones to say Zeke who, I know jokingly in jest, but with Pollard's value, how do you see that being affected with Ezekiel Elliott still being away from the team?
Well, he's now one of those late-round running backs that people are going to be targeting. It's kind of like Justin Jackson, but sort of even more so because Pollard would be the featured back behind one of the best run-blocking offensive lines in the entire league that's getting Travis Frederick back. Now, with that being said, I don't expect Ezekiel Elliott to miss multiple regular season games. If he misses any games at all, it's a different situation than Melvin Gordon. It's a different situation than Le'Veon Bell. He is dug in. He's trying to make a point. I do think at the end of the day that the Joneses are going to be smart. They're going to get him back on the team. But for right now, if you draft Zeke in the first round, you really have to be looking hard at Tony Pollard at some point in the 10th or 11th round. And some people may even stretch and draft him earlier, thinking that Zeke could miss significant time. I just don't see that happening.
On that note of rookie running backs, it seems like every year there's one or two guys that really just break the rankings that are rookie running backs and step in and have huge fantasy outputs. Who are a few guys that you think could really jump out at that rookie running back position?
Well, Josh Jacobs is going to be the first guy most people are going to discuss. He will be the featured back in Oakland. He's a very good pass catcher. He's a three-down back. We've seen John Gruden have running backs who've produced statistically very good fantasy production in the past, so he'll be a top 50 pick. I like what I'm seeing from David Montgomery in Chicago. I wouldn't be surprised if he were the top scoring rookie in fantasy football this season among running backs. This guy is extremely tough to bring down. He has looked good during preseason, although it hasn't been that much work that we've seen him, but he has looked good when he's been on the gridiron. And Jordan Howard leaves behind 270 touches. And I would think David Montgomery is going to get all of those and then some. He's moving up into the fourth round in drafts. Miles Sanders is also someone that you should be looking at somewhere in the middle of your draft. Now, the Eagles, they do have a very crowded backfield. Doug Peterson has utilized backfield committees in the past. In fact, no running back who's played for Peterson in Philadelphia has averaged more than 13 touches a game. The most has been Ryan Matthews, believe it or not, who averaged 12.9. But you could also make the argument that the Eagles have not had a back like Miles Sanders. So at some point during the course of the regular season, I would expect that Miles Sanders will take over that starting job if he can't grab it in week one from Jordan Howard.
Reading your fantasy tiers from a couple of weeks ago, you talked about how the tier one and tier two for wide receivers, it's really splitting hairs in that case. How do you differentiate between guys like Devontae Adams, Michael Thomas, Odell Beckham Jr., when maybe all three of them could be available on the board in your drafts?
That's exactly where the tiers come in handy, because you don't really need to concern yourself with, oh man, well, you know, I missed out on Julio if Michael Thomas is there, or I missed out on OBJ if you've still got Tyreek Hill or Juju Smith-Schuster on the board. Very similar players, very similar value. Now, if you're like me, you're trying to get one of those guys, maybe a Hopkins or an Adams at the end of the first round, although in some PPR leagues, Hopkins could go in the middle of that round. But I always like to come out of the first two rounds, unless I get an opportunity to grab a running back in the second round that's just too good to pass up. I like to get a running back and a wide receiver with my first two picks, because I want to have one of those aforementioned wide receivers on my roster. You want to have a balanced roster. That's really what you're looking for in fantasy football, and that's how you have success and take home championships. So I always look to get one of those guys in the second round if I don't have a pick at the end of the first round where I can get someone like Devontae Adams.
Talking to NFL Network senior fantasy analyst Michael Fabiano. Now, with the Cardinals, I know everybody is keeping an eye on Kyler Murray and what he's been doing. When you're evaluating and looking at what he can do, how much stock do you put into those preseason games, seeing how well he did in game one, how much he struggled in game two? What's it like evaluating when there's so little film, NFL film, on him?
Yeah, and they're running vanilla offense. It's like I love Kyler Murray. I think he could make a major impact for fantasy owners this season. Now, if you keep in mind that most of the rookie quarterbacks who have put up big numbers, like been top 10 quarterbacks as first-year NFL starters, they've been able to run with the football successfully. In fact, since 1999, we've seen five rookies in the top 10. All of them either rushed for 500-plus yards or rushed for five or more touchdowns. And I think Kyler could do both. Now, you have to also take it with a grain of salt. Cliff Kingsbury is in his first season in the NFL as a head coach. There's been a lot of talk about the offensive line having some question marks. So I don't expect that Kyler's going to come out and absolutely light the world on fire like Cam Newton did during his rookie season. There's going to be ebbs and flows. But at the end of the day, I do believe Kyler Murray can be a top 10 fantasy quarterback, not only because of what he can do with his feet, because that's going to be a big part of it, but he's also coming off of a season where he was very accurate, and I believe that that will translate into the NFL. But he could have a slow start because it's a big change from college football to the pros.
I wanted to run through a couple guys with Arizona ties that were on your breakout sleeper and deep sleepers list. First off, with Christian Kirk, Arizona Cardinal, played his prep ball here in Arizona as well. What is it about him that you think he could really be a sleeper and see his role expand in Cliff Kingsbury's offense?
You know, oftentimes you see second-year wide receivers really bust out in the stat sheets, and Christian showed me some flashes during the course of last season that impressed me. And he is a player who certainly has his arrow pointing upward. And when you consider, you know, that the Cardinals, they were one of the worst teams in the league in offensive plays per game. And Kingsbury comes in here talking about trying to run 90 plays a game. Now, that's not going to happen. But last season, his final collegiate season, his offense has averaged 82.5 plays per game. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So Kirk is going to see more opportunities because based on that, you would think the Cardinals are going to be running far more plays. They could be running a lot of 10 personnel, running out a lot of four wide receiver sets. And although I have Larry Fitzgerald ranked number one among Cardinals wide receivers in PPR leagues, I could very easily see Christian Kirk pushing him and maybe surpassing him even in targets and fantasy points this season on that team.
N'Keal Harry, a guy who dominated at Tempe with plenty of circus catches and big plays. He's with the Patriots now. He's a deep sleeper at wide receiver for you. How do you see him kind of fitting in to the Patriots offense?
You know, since the news that Josh Gordon will be back came out, I'm kind of fading N'Keal Harry a little bit. He was a late-round pick before. He's still a late-round pick, but you really have to think that Josh Gordon is going to see a big role in that passing game, especially with Rob Gronkowski now retired. Last season, when Gordon played, Tom Brady averaged around four more fantasy points per game than when he didn't have Josh Gordon. Gordon's a playmaker. Now, we're far from 2013 when he was the top wide receiver in fantasy football, but this is a guy who can still put up numbers. And with N'Keal Harry now likely the third or fourth option, because, you know, that Jacoby Myers has looked pretty good too in Patriots camp and in the preseason. N'Keal is fallen a little bit to me, to the point where in a 10-team league, maybe he's not drafted. In a 12-team league, I would still think he'd be draftable. Also, keep in mind that Josh Gordon has missed most of the last five seasons because of off-the-field issues, so he is a bit of a volatile pick. But for now, N'Keal Harry is losing a little bit of his luster because Gordon's back in the mix.
We saw Kalen Ballage come on strong at the end of last year. Looks like he's going to be sharing some time within that backfield. Just what are you looking out of him to take those next steps and be a more viable fantasy option at running back position?
I'm digging him. I actually was targeting him in all of my mocks in the offseason. I've had a couple of actual drafts where I was able to get him as well, and pretty happy with it. And the reason why is, when you look at the numbers last season in that Miami backfield, it wasn't the Kenyon Drake show. He split touches basically down the middle with Frank Gore, and I think Drake maybe had three more all season long. And whatever the case may be, the Dolphins don't see Kenyon Drake as a featured back, and now he's banged up, he's in a walking boot, and Ballage has every opportunity to take that starting job and put a vice grip hold on it. There is also the potential for him to earn early down and goal line opportunities. And Drake may be coming in and playing that James White role, because remember, you know, the Dolphins could be utilizing a bit of a New England Patriots kind of look on the offensive side of the football. So I would think in standard scoring leagues, Kalen Ballage is now the more valuable fantasy option in that backfield. PPR, I still think it's Drake. But do not be surprised if Ballage ends up being one of the better draft bargains when all is said and done in 2019.
And one more before you go. Mark Andrews played his prep ball here, coming off a strong rookie season with the Ravens. Tight end breakout for you. Just what do you like about Mark Andrews within that Ravens offense?
Quietly led all rookie tight ends in yards last season. And, you know, think about that offense, right? that's not going to be an offense that's going to be throwing the ball deep a ton. Their wide receiver weapons leave much to be desired, even though they drafted Marquise Brown. I wouldn't be surprised if Andrews is right up there near the top in terms of targets at the end of the season. He gained a rapport with Lamar Jackson during their rookie seasons. He's shown off during training camp. There's been a lot of reports about how he's been the most dangerous offensive weapon on that Ravens attack besides Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram. So this is a player that at a position that's getting better, it's getting deeper, there's a lot of youth, you can wait on Andrews until probably the 9th or 10th round and still land him, because if you don't get one of the 5 or 6 top tight ends, basically the strategy is just to wait. And what I've liked to do is pair Andrews with maybe a Delanie Walker or a Jordan Reed, maybe a Greg Olsen, and then see what Andrews does, because I can get my two tight ends if I can't get those top guys. After round 10, pair them together, play the matchups, and hope that Andrews does break out and become a reliable fantasy option, because he has shown some flashes that he can be that guy.
There's a reason you're the best in the business, Michael. Thanks so much for the time and the insight.
Appreciate it. Take care.